Hello, hello. Welcome back, Leading Women in Tech. I have a treat for you today. If you have thought about how do you need to operate to get to the executive level, or you have dreams for being in the boardroom, today's guest is the guest you need to be listening to. Julia Cheetah Brown is an executive in HR. She's global human and financial capital executive is the way she introduces herself. And she has a passion for partnering with boards of directors. She's been working with boards for most of her career. She got started really early, although as she says it, she was in the corner of the room. But she loves driving organizational growth, transformational culture. And along the way, as a chief people and culture officer, she has been able to observe what it takes to make a big impact. She's had a huge impact herself and has learned what it takes to differentiate yourself. And actually, one of the things I really loved in our conversation today is one, how she's not traditional, something I am seeing a theme of in our guests, but two, how your lack of traditionalness is actually the thing that sets you apart. And it's why we talked about not staying in your lane. We get to that quite late on, but stick around for that. There's some of the time, the work we have to do that she'll go into, it can be frustrating, it requires perseverance. It can feel daunting to do some of the stuff she talks about in terms of learning how to contribute to the business and potentially sticking your nose in things, but it is what you need to do. So if you've ever wondered about being in the boardroom, about being that senior leader and just wondering what it is that's going to mean that you can make that difference, or if you're already there and thinking, why do I keep getting shut down or shut out? This episode's for you. So without further ado, let's get Julie onto the show. Welcome to the Leading Women in Tech podcast, the show that celebrates women in technology leadership. I'm your host, Toni Collis, and this podcast is the result of my passion for building better tech by diversifying the leadership of the technology sector. Join me on this journey as I discuss all things leadership, what it takes to be innovative, breaking through the glass ceiling, be a great leader, and how to navigate the unique experiences we face as women in tech. So sit back, grab your headphones, and get ready to be inspired to become a better leader. Welcome to the show, Julie. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
I'd love to start with you sharing with us your journey to date, your highlights, those all important lowlights, and how you came to be so passionate about building a better tech industry and helping women to be part of that journey.
Absolutely. So I started out my journey actually in finance. So a bit non-traditional for someone who ended up in human resources. But I have an undergrad in finance and I had absolutely no idea what I was going to do with it. And I ended up securing a job in Chicago in financial services. So I explored that for the first 6 years of my career. It was pretty foundational, honestly, to the leader that I am now, because it was a small business. Some very successful people in the brokerage industry that had gone out on their own and started their own business. And I was an intern to help them basically transition money, large amounts of money from their old to the new. And I was with them for 6 years. I became Series 7 licensed, which means in the United States, I was able to trade stocks and bonds at a pretty young age. And I also became a certified financial planner, which gave us fiduciary responsibility over managing money. So I think the learnings that I had there, because we were a six-person firm, you did everything. You looked at a situation and said, what is the problem that we're trying to solve? And it wasn't about a grade or a title. It was about what could we all do to lean in together to help the client. And I think that has really been a foundation for me in how I work and how I live, because I try to find a solution. I don't limit myself by, you know, a box maybe that I should be supposed to be thinking of. I like to think of the whole problem set and figure out what we can do to solve it. So yeah. A little bit non-traditional. And after about 6 years, I was ready to move on from there, but I needed to figure out how I was going to parlay that into something different. And I was in Chicago and Aon Hewitt was in Chicago. It was Hewitt Associates at the time. And they took me on as an executive compensation and board consultant. It felt safe to me making that jump, because they could carry all my licenses. But at the same time, I really embarked upon a new journey. I learned about human resources. I hadn't really learned or really thought much about that, honestly, but this was my parlay into that new world of HR. And I spent, 4 years at Hewitt doing executive compensation consulting. And that was foundational for me because that allowed me to be in the boardroom at a relatively young age. Now, to be clear, I was in the corner of the boardroom taking notes and calculating, but I was there. And so joking aside, I watched and I saw how the board interacted with management. I watched to see the kinds of things that they were talking about strategically. Is that aligned to, you know, how you ran a company? And I learned a lot. That was another pretty foundational move for me. And then there came a point when I decided that I wanted to go internal myself. I wanted to move away from consulting. And that really is what started my journey in human resources. So I moved then on to 2-3 other large publicly traded companies. I've always been in big global publicly traded organizations, first leading compensation and benefits, because that was really the parlay from the work I'd done previously in the board consulting, and then over time broadening into all of HR. And so now I have responsibility for all of HR, but it's really people and culture. It's the people organization, it's the culture of the organization. And then we're also responsible for all of our internal communications as well. And then this is something that I'm really proud of, I think is interesting, the environment. So in this distributed world, we also have responsibility for the environment. And that could be the physical environment where we have offices and people come in, or the distributed environment and the culture that we create for all of our employees.
That is such a fascinating journey. You mentioned there several times like non-traditional. And if I've learned anything doing this show, it's that almost all of us have something non-traditional. And yet we all think that somehow we're the oddball. And the number of women I've spoken to over the years who are like, I can't do this because I don't have these check boxes. I'm like, I'm yet to meet somebody who has these check boxes, who's done something amazing, right? What do you say to those women? Like, what do you wish you told yourself maybe 20 years ago? I don't know how long ago, but what do you wish you'd heard?
I guess that you can do anything. So that is something that I did deeply believe in. And I took the next opportunity. I didn't worry about whether or not it met some kind of a path. If it was something that I had interest in, that I was intellectually curious about, I would take the chance and I would take that new role. I do think that that's very important. I do a lot of mentoring right now for people coming out of college or people early in their careers. And I think people get so worried about that one decision is going to define them. And that's so untrue. Mm-hmm. The point is you can take a right in the road. And if that's the right path, that's wonderful. You can keep on it. But if you decide that's not the path for you, there'll be another opportunity and then you can go take a left somewhere else. So a piece of advice that I would absolutely share is no one decision is that big that it's going to define your career. You'll have multiple opportunities to make a change and learn something different or go on a different path. Because again, as a finance person starting out, I never in a million years thought that I would lead HR. Yet here I am. And really the integration between the early part of my career and what I do now is so strong. I couldn't do what I do now well had I not started out the way that I did.
I love that because so much of the time I would say people's superpower, I started realizing this about myself. Part of our superpower is our differentiation. So I started off in physics, moved to computing, and I found that my superpower was being the translator between the computer scientists who did not understand the science, but were trying to implement the science. And the scientists, whether they're physicists, biologists, chemists, engineers, just could not speak to the software engineers and the computer scientists. And I was a translator. And that was my superpower. And I've seen this time and time again, that the thing that makes you different is your superpower. As an HR person, do you see that coming through?
Absolutely. And it's... Well, I actually think there's two superpowers, and I'll talk about that a bit later. But for me, I do believe that like right now, one of the reasons I'm so successful is I can live at the intersection of human capital and financial capital. I can go into a room with my, C-suite peers or with the board, and I can speak the language of the business. That gives me a level of credibility. If I didn't have that, I might still be a very good HR person, but I wouldn't necessarily I don't think I would have as deep and rich of a connection, because I can actually translate. I love that word that you used, between the two. So I do think that that is a superpower that I personally was able to take advantage of, because I started out in finance. But what I'd say is everyone should. You don't have to be a financial expert to understand the business and to parlay your business understanding onto the work that you're doing every day. And it's pretty fundamental, I think, to being successful.
I want to take a bit of a segue into HR for a moment. I really want to talk to you about the business side of it. I think that's part of why I really want you on the show. But I know I've worked with, I don't know how many dozens of women who have an HR function over the years. I work with all women in tech. And I know we've got listeners who are in the HR function listening to this. And so much of the time they are struggling. I've even coached a chief people officer who has struggled to be invited to the executive team meetings. And I'm like, wait, hold on. It's in your job title. And I do think part of it is not speaking that business language. And I say to all executives I coach, whether they are a CTO, a COO, a CPO, like whatever they are, you need to offer value to the business, not just from your function. So do you see this being a real blocker in HR? Do you think it's unique to HR, or is it across the board here?
I don't think it's unique to HR, but I think that support functions suffer from it more than other functions. So I see human resources, IT, marketing, sometimes it's like, well, no, stay in your lane. Yeah. We'll come and talk to you when we have a question about people. And my response is always, I'd love for you to tell me anything about this business that doesn't relate to people. Find one thing. So it kind of speaks to your example about the CHRO that wasn't in the meetings. I've actually had that experience where I had a really senior leader look at me and say, what does HR have to do with strategy? Why do you need to be here? And I didn't stay at that job long, but that exists out there. My personal feeling, and I do think what differentiates, is that we're all business leaders at this level. We're all responsible to be a cross-functional business leader, a fiduciary of the company. We all have different areas of expertise, and we need to respect that and respect each other's. But at the same time, I feel responsible to make sure that we're making the best decision as a company. And I'll ask a question about operations or finance. If, quite honestly, if A, I don't understand it, or B, it doesn't make sense, because if I don't think I'm properly doing my job.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you completely. Well, actually, that brings me nicely to the meaty bit of this conversation, which is helping our listeners, because I know you're passionate about this, properly understand and contribute to the business. Because I know both you and I are completely aligned on, if you want to become that senior leader, you need to understand the business, you need to be contributing to the business. So what does that mean? And where do you see aspiring leaders falling short?
What I first say is, I don't have a secret sauce. So there's no easy answer here. You have to invest the time and energy, and you have to learn it. And if you're with a publicly traded company, honestly, it's a little bit easier, because there's so much public information. You can listen to the quarterly calls. There's just so much out there. If you're at a private or a smaller company, you have to, and what I've done every single time I start a new company, I just start to connect with all the business leaders, and I just start asking questions. And at first, some people, honestly, they don't necessarily receive it well. Most do, but there's always some that are kind of wondering why I'm asking all these questions. But then over time, when they see, first of all, that I really am curious, I want to learn and understand, that's number one, then people will continue to explain things to you. But to me, the real point, and actually my CEO just said this to me within the last month, and I think it's the biggest compliment, that when people see you making a difference outside of your lane because you understand the business, you're going to get invited next time, because then they see the fruits of the labor. I'm not going to pretend it's easy. I'm not going to pretend that I haven't invited myself to 1,000 meetings. I'm not going to pretend that it's not frustrating sometimes, because it is. But for me, at least, you have to persevere, because I can't do my job well, or the best that I can do it, which is important to me, if I don't understand the business. Because how can I provide advice? It's in isolation. Then I'm providing theoretical advice. I'm providing advice based upon HR theory or financial theory. But if I want it to be applicable to the business, I got to understand the business.
Yeah. I think this is something that we often don't comprehend as we rise up in our careers, because we start out being in our own little box, whether you're in finance, HR, or, you know, software engineering, where I came from. You're in your little box and you don't worry about what marketing is doing. You don't worry about what HR is doing. You're just over here minding your own business. And then you get irritated by the apparent interference of these other parts of the business. How many software engineers out there have ever thought HR is just the biggest pain in the butt? For example, right? I've had that conversation so many times. I've had HR leaders on the show going, this is how we help. And I'm like, yes, why did I not know that earlier in my career? And so I think this is this manifestation as we rise up that means we think that the best thing is to be the one that stays in our lane, and it is the worst thing for business. And we've got to retrain ourselves. So how can we go about undoing that toxic narrative, quite frankly, that means that we're reluctant to branch out and be nosy about what's going on?
Well, I would say, honestly, one person at a time. That helps. But you do need to show your value and have people understand and tangibly see the results of it. And then they click over pretty easy. And the example I always use, which I think resonates with people, is one of the other things, and we'll talk about this later. I think one of the biggest things a leader can do is provide that full perspective and context, right? If I have the context, if I understand the problem, like going back to earlier in my career, then I can solve it. Then I can go into solution mode and, you know, and help really solve the problem. If I'm just given a subset of the information, then all I can do is a task, right? Because I don't have context around what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, how it interplays with something bigger. So I'm limited in what I can provide or respond to because I don't have all the information. Once I have a broader set of information, then I can go into solution mode and really help. And I think just that narrative of give me two sets of facts and I'll give you the, you know, it's a yes, no binary answer versus give me the context and then I can provide you a solution. And that's very true.
Yeah,
you can't always do that every time because sometimes it is just a binary task, but you have to understand the business well enough to know when you just provide that answer versus when you're like, second, how does that relate to this? Or have you considered that? This is something I often talk to my employees about on my team. I'm like, hey, because I try to provide a lot of context. Don't always give me the answer that I ask you for. Tell me the solution. I might ask you for X. And first of all, if you don't understand, you have to keep asking me questions. But if you look at that and the question, the answer is really why, what you might come back and say is, okay, Julie, no, ask for X, and here's that answer. But I actually think what you're really solving for is why. To me, that's how we differentiate ourselves.
Yeah. Oh, hell yes. And I think that ties in beautifully with the next question where I want to move on to boardrooms, because a lot of what we've just talked about is recognizing that your value comes from the fact that you're an expert in your thing, and that if you just expect the person asking you the question to just know exactly how to ask you the question, then you're missing the fact that your unique value is that you're an expert. They don't even necessarily know what they need to be asking you. They need to have you in the room enough so that you have the context beyond what they can comprehend to really bring your expertise into the room. Which brings me to boardrooms. Obviously, you started early, as you already talked about. And I do see this value add piece being a key to being in the boardroom. So I would love to know your thoughts on that. Like, what is it that's different about being in the boardroom compared to being on the executive team?
Oh, gosh, so much. So first, I would say, where do I begin with that question? First, I would say for me, the way that I managed it, because to your point, I had a lot of different vantage points to a board before, honestly, I even was on a board myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I came in from a consulting standpoint and in the beginning as an observer. I wasn't really participating, but I was observing. And then as I grew in my career, I was leading some of the board conversations. But then when I came into the HR role, all of a sudden I was a partner, right? Because the head of HR oftentimes partners with the head of the compensation committee. So then I had a direct relationship that I was managing with the board, but from the seat of management, right? Now that I've been doing that for 15, 20 years. And now in the interim, I've been on, of course, not-for-profit and advisory boards. So I've sat in the seat, right? It's different when you're on a for-profit versus a non-for-profit board, but it still gives you an inside visibility to being a board member and the different responsibilities there. So for me, the combination, I almost call it like the triangulation around the boardroom, has given me all those different vantage points. So to your point, first of all, not everyone in the boardroom always understands everything that's being discussed either. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to look like they don't understand. They don't want to look silly with their peers. So anything you can do in advance of the board meeting to prepare and prep so that everyone goes in knowing what's going on. That's one thing that I actively do as, you know, from the management standpoint, I don't ever want to surprise a board member in the meeting. That is never a good thing to do. So that's number one. And then number two, for actually being in there, and this is just me, how I manage it. I call it the next five questions, right? Because on one hand, you need to be a broad strategist and you have to go in telling a story. They're not going to listen to seven layers of detail. You have to be able to build your business case in a succinct story. That's where you start. But then it's the next five questions. You have to figure out or try to presuppose what you think the next five or 10 questions are that they may ask. Because so you have to be able to go from broad to deep. And then also you're not always going to have all the answers. If you're well prepared and you can go deep 75% of the time, then when they ask the question where you can't, you're in a position of credibility to say, you know what? I don't know that answer. Let me go and work with my team and I'll come back and I'll bring it to you. But for me, what I've found is I just over prepare and I really try to put myself in their shoes and say, if I were them, what would I ask? And that's how I typically prepare for a board meeting.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, knowing when to go deep, how to go deep, so you've got the credibility to use as like a little chip you cash in when you're like, you know what, I don't know, let me come back to you, is so powerful. Because I think we're so worried about our credibility because we've all had it backfire. And there's this constant need to position ourselves, whether it's in a boardroom, an executive team, or just your peers, right? There's this constant need of like, do I have the reputation? How should I pitch this? And I mean, as an executive coach, I have this conversation almost on a daily basis, which is, you know, how much to prepare. And I'd almost say the higher up the meeting is, the more time you spend preparing, but also what level of detail do you go into? And it so ties in with reputation and credibility, plus understanding the person in front of you. And I mean, as a technologist going in with the level of detail I love, they're just like not listening to me. It doesn't give credibility. It's just noise. The credibility comes from linking it all together and going into detail on the business perspective that they do understand. I don't need to prove my credibility as a technologist. I've got that. Like today, I don't need to prove my credibility as a coach. I've got that. What I'm doing instead is showing my ability to function in a room. Would you agree with that?
I would. And in addition to that, I'll add two things. Number one, you have to understand what all the other people around you are saying to them because you have to meet them where they are. Yes. Right? So I always think about what was the last board meeting? What was my last presentation to them? Where did I leave them? Because a ton has happened in between that they don't need to know or care about, but I do have to go back and pick them up where I left them and bring them to where we are now. Mm-hmm. I also need to make sure that my comments are in alignment with my peers. So if they're telling them something else about the business, and then I say something that appears incongruent with that, it's going to cause confusion. And then honestly, potentially disrupt the meeting for me and for someone else. So I think knowing your audience, saying, you know, articulating the business case, and really kind of understanding the environment and what they're hearing from other people is equally as important.
Yeah. I mean, I think that understanding people is so foundational in my mind. I would say that as an executive coach, but understand the person in front of you. It makes such a big difference to how we communicate and the impact we can therefore have. So let's talk about impact at work. I want to talk beyond the boardroom, beyond business contributions. What do you see as the most important aspects that any of us as leaders needs to be aware of in the world of work?
Oh gosh, there's so many. Where do I begin? Well, I am going to say as a leader, it's just very important to be authentic. I mean, I think that's truly the most important thing because people, I think, especially see right now, they see through a lack of authenticity. So as a leader, I think you have to be authentic and transparent with your team. And if you think about it, if you're doing that, most everything else fits into it, right? Because then you're talking about the business and giving them the real scoop. You're providing context. You're helping them understand how what they do fits within something broader. And if you really are authentic, if you really are honestly vulnerable, then they feel comfortable asking questions so they can do their best work.
Yeah. But that authenticity piece is so foundational. I think I often get told by people I work with, whether they're a client or a team member, that I come across as like really authentic in the way I operate. I mean, I'm very transparent in my business. I think that's really important. To the point I'd be like, I can't share that with you, but I will do when I can. I will lay on the table like when I can't share something rather than being really cagey. And I think most of us really misunderstand what authenticity means, how it overlaps with transparency, and why it's so important. Can you expand on that a little bit? You know, because to me, it's about knowing my own worth and not being afraid as well. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, and it's interesting because I remember pretty early on in my career and, you know, at that time, I mean, even now often in tech, I'm one of the only women in the room. So 25 years ago, I was young and one of the only women in the room. And as I was starting to rise up in leadership, I remember people would tell me that you had to almost be cold or have a certain persona to be taken seriously, especially as a woman. And for a while, yeah. I tried to do that. I was like, all right, well, I have to behave this certain way for them to really take me seriously as a leader. And I realized that's just not true. Actually, the more honest and vulnerable and open you are, the more people will actually come to you and quite honestly bring their honest selves to work, ask questions. And then in the end, they'll be a lot more loyal to you because you've treated them with respect. So to me, I think the most important thing that you can do, because again, it leads, like I said, authenticity, vulnerability, it just really leads to trust. And if your employees truly trust you, and I'd say even more broadly, if employees in an organization trust the leadership team and believe that they're telling them the real deal, even if it's not what they want to hear, even if the message is hard, but if they believe that they're being honest, you're going to get a much higher level of trust and engagement and loyalty from your teams because they'll believe in you. You know what I mean? They'll believe that you're telling them the straight story. Yeah. And that's really what people want.
And it's telling that straight story, isn't it? I've worked places where you're like, I just don't believe what this person's saying. And sure enough, 9 times out of 10, like what they said doesn't come to fruition or you find out wasn't true. But when you have somebody, even when you disagree with them, because we all disagree and that's okay. But when you disagree, but you know you can trust it, you're so much more capable of dealing with that, I think. It's a beautiful place to be. I could talk about this one all day, but I have one final question I really want to ask, which, because you've got such a huge wealth of experience, both personally, but also as an HR leader. And we've got thousands of women listening to this show. What is the one final tip on excelling and thriving as a woman in tech that you think that my audience should hear?
Trust yourself. believe in yourself. You're as smart as everyone else out there. There's not some secret book or something that you're missing. And I think oftentimes people think that. I thought that. I was waiting for some secret thing to be bestowed upon me when I became an executive. And the truth is, we're all human beings trying to do our best work. And just because someone interrupts you, just because someone speaks louder or speaks over you, it doesn't mean they're right. Trust yourself. Now, do your diligence, as I said, research, know the business. But then when you speak, really trust yourself, because you're probably right and you can make huge contributions. I've seen too many people, women especially, who hold back because they're afraid that they're wrong and they don't contribute. And I'm here to tell you, believe in yourself.
Yes, believe in yourself. And you know what? That's where the authenticity comes from, big time. Right. We have to move on to these quick fire questions. And I'm really excited about this. My favorite question that I ask everybody is this first one. And I am really interested, given your background, to hear what you have to say. So what is the worst piece of advice you have ever been given?
The worst piece of advice that I've ever been given is to stay in my own lane. Basically, to only talk about people, things. And it kind of leads back to the, I'm sorry, why is HR involved in that? And I actually had someone tell me that I should hold my comments unless they related to people.
Yeah. No. Isn't it? I feel like I need to write a book of these worst pieces of advice I ask every guest, isn't it? It's just such a great question. And I'm like, oh, it's heartbreaking. Because here's a flipper for you. Like, I actually had an email this morning that landed in my inbox, which was stay in your own lane. And I was like, oh gosh, it was so triggering to me because of the kind of thing you just said. But the flip side of it was, this woman was saying, stop getting distracted by everybody else and their own shiny objects and stay in your lane. So there is a place for this. The problem is, in the modern workplace, most of the time it is so toxic. It's like, get out of our business. You don't belong here. And everybody listening, you do belong. You absolutely belong. If you've got an idea, speak up. If somebody shuts you down, just speak up again, right? Okay, what is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
There are two and they relate. One is, and this was by an executive coach, and she told me to own my space because I would have a tendency to talk very quickly, which I still do sometimes. And not complete a thought or own the space. And she said, you have so much to give. Why are you rushing through it? Pause. Just take up your space. That relates to another one, which is also own your narrative. Don't let anyone else build the narrative for you. To me, in my mind, those relate closely together.
Yeah. Yes. I love that. I love that so much. Okay, next question. What is the last book you read?
All right. So I have two. One is a business book, but I love it. It's called Damsel in Distress. And it is about a hedge fund manager in the early 80s and 90s. And she worked her way through the whole kind of bond market as one of the only females in this space. So I actually have this written down. It's by Dominique Milly, and it's about the golden age of the hedge funds. And it's fascinating because she's French and she moved to the US and she was in this, you know, distressed bond market as a woman. And I just loved that book. Wow. It was fascinating. And then on the fiction side, kind of the same theme. I don't know how many of you guys are reading Kate Quinn, but I'm reading now The Diamond Eye, and it's about a female sharpshooter in World War II. And that's fascinating as well. Like, she's just kind of kick ass. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but it's absolutely fascinating. And so I love books about female heroines, both fiction and nonfiction.
Oh, thank you for sharing those. I will make sure for listeners that those are linked in the show notes. So if you want to go and read, do. I get so many great book recommendations on this show as well. I feel like I never need to peruse anymore. I just end up buying all the books that I recommend. It's a great job there, as I tell you. Next question. Have you got a mindset tip to help listeners adjust how they think and act, particularly on the topic of stepping up and being comfortable stepping out of their lane?
So for me, it's twofold. It's be part of the solution. It's easy to bring a problem and say what's wrong with it. And sometimes that feels easier. But if you are part of the solution and you bring the solution as well, then you're more likely to be heard. And I think it's a more positive way to interact, because then you're not the person raising your hand and always saying what's wrong. You're the person who are recognizing and seeing a problem, but then having some creative solutions to get started.
I love that. I love that so much. Those creative solutions. This has been an amazing, inspiring discussion, Julie. So how can listeners find out more about what you do, connect with you, follow you, stalk you, basically, is what we're getting at here?
LinkedIn. I'm active on LinkedIn. So if you want to get to know me a little bit more, you can find me out there.
Thank you. This, as I said, has been inspiring. And I particularly love the conversations about how to make us as women feel more confident stepping out of our lane, stepping into the boardroom, stepping into that executive room, just stepping outside our job description and saying, hey, I've still got something to add here, because that is really where our value comes, is turning our expertise into real value. So with that in mind, or maybe with something completely different, is there any final thoughts you would like to leave listeners with today?
Just reiterating the importance of trusting yourself and believing in yourself. You know what to do. Just got to lean in and do it.
100%. Lean in and do it, ladies.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Julie. Thank you so much. And listeners, remember, aside from not staying in your lane, remember to believe in yourself, stay in your tech leadership game, follow your dreams, because the world really does need that uniqueness that you bring as a leading woman in tech.